Hello. Come in, come in, come in, do, and make yourselves at home. This is the History of Ideas podcast, where we tackle some of the biggest questions around. This week, we're wondering how technology has changed us. Here's the programme.
If you happen to ask me, Justin, who is the intellectual architect of the modern world? I'd say, well, I might go on a bit, but if you ask me to keep it short, I'd have one answer for you. It's the polymath and visionary who set out the relationship between science, technology, and the perfectibility of human society that is still recognisable today. A utopian thinker who blew a fanfare for all that science and technology might achieve in the future. It is Francis Bacon.
Has technology changed us?
Francis Bacon was an English statesman, scientist and philosopher in the 16th and 17th centuries and a pivotal figure during the scientific revolution of Europe. After his political career ended in a corruption scandal, he devoted himself to scientific inquiry. He developed a system of scientific investigation which became known as the Baconian method, relying on inductive reasoning, the accumulation and analysis of data, and control of extraneous variables. This became the basis of the scientific method of modern science. He died of pneumonia while experimenting with using snow as a preserver of meat on a bitterly cold day.
Has technology changed us?
In 1605, in his book, The Advancement of Learning, Bacon quite deliberately announced an ambitious new scientific project that challenged the dominant Aristotelian model of natural philosophy. For Bacon, modern science was to be active, experimental, and based on observation of the natural world, rather than applying abstract contemplation to that world. What he called the Instauratio Magna would herald an age where scientific method would lay the foundations for domination of nature, and scientists would improve the world. Bacon had a profound confidence in the potential of human ingenuity to make society better, and this idea continues to fuel innovation today. But he was also very concerned by the ethical ambiguities of progress. Even as he poured his hopes into science and technology, he recognised that the figure of the human technological innovator posed a problem. He wrote about it in his book of 1609, The Wisdom of the Ancients, and the model he had in mind was Daedalus to us, Daedalus to the Greeks. He was renowned as the most skilful of inventors, but whose machines had a disastrous impact on his son, Icarus, who perished flying too close to the sun, and on the wife of King Minos, Pasiphae, for whom he created the machinery to allow her to couple with a bull.
When Queen Pasiphae of Crete gave birth, it was to a child with the head, the horns of a bull. King Minos sent for Daedalus. I asked you to make me a son, an heir. Instead, you have made an abomination. Get rid of it! Queen Pasiphae clutched the monster to her breast. Daedalus looked from sobbing queen to ranting king. How to please them both? Great king, I'll make a prison for him, a prison from which he will never escape. He turned to the queen. Always he'll be near you, and he'll want for nothing. At once, you will begin at once. In the caves beneath the palace, Daedalus fashioned a marvellous matrix of corridors and chambers, a labyrinth of such complexity that if any human being apart from its maker took 3 steps into the dark, they'd be utterly lost. One night, when the child was asleep, Daedalus gathered him in his arms, took him into the central chamber of the maze and slipped away. Food and drink was lowered into the maze. The child didn't die. He grew bigger and stronger until rumours travelled from Crete, rumours of a flesh-eating monster beneath the palace of Minos, the Minotaur. for me, he's the prototype of the mad scientist. He's excited by what he can do without ever thinking about the implications of what he's doing.
Daniel Morden is a storyteller who, like Bacon, believes in the usefulness of myths.
He's endlessly solving problems in a short-term way, only to precipitate much more serious problems in the process.
He's actually one of several craftsmen or technology gods and heroes in antiquity.
Edith Hall is a specialist in ancient literature, and I asked her if this myth was always about the dangers of innovation and technology.
Daedalus is different. He's a human, to start with, and he's also always got a shady side. There's always something dangerous about his contrivances. He doesn't suffer as a result of them. He makes other people suffer. He causes collateral damage.
And I think that's really what Bacon is so intrigued by, that his great ambition that human knowledge will dominate nature, but constantly the anxiety is we don't think hard enough or our pride overweens us.
I think what Bacon says about Daedalus is a very original reading. It brings out the dark side rather than the tragic side. A lot of painters, for example, of his time liked to paint a very tragic Daedalus weeping at the death of his son as though he is suffering unjustly. Actually, he knew perfectly well this was a young lad who probably wasn't to be trusted with a new kind of aeroplane. It's the lack of responsibility. And I think he felt that very, very keenly. And I think it is still a very important message for our times that all science has to go with this enormous ethical responsibility to thinking about where it's going to take the human race.
One of the things I like about the way Bacon uses the Daedalus episode is that he gets to the question of human motivation. For Bacon, the ultimate goal of the scientific project might be to reveal and participate in the glory of God. But the individual scientist is a mere human, capable of cunning and vanity, as well as good intentions. I wanted to ask a 21st century scientist about this, so I went to Sheffield to meet Professor Richard Jones. He works in nanotechnology, which in the last 20 years or so has probably been the cause of some of the noisiest public debate about the potential dangers of technology.
Here is a man who's curious, but also gets a big kick out of it. So there's a sort of pride in having discovered something. Do you think that motivates scientists today?
Yes, a lot. They're motivated very much by the approval of their peers. A scientist who does something that is recognised by other scientists has just been really cool. They get a lot of kudos from that, and that's important to people. We look at some of the discoveries of the 20th century, nuclear weapons and such like. They were done with a full knowledge of how destructive they were going to be. What motivated the scientists to make nuclear weapons? Partly a feeling of that's what they ought to do, that's what they were being asked to do by their society. But frankly, I'd be surprised if some of those scientists didn't think, well, actually, these are technically sweet problems. For all the horrible outcome, that drive of getting something difficult to work was probably quite important for them.
There is throughout that narrative this anxiety in Bacon about unintended consequences. Daedalus is clever enough normally to think of a solution. And in one sense, I guess that's a good model for how technology works. You know, if things go pear-shaped, you just have to be a bit more ingenious and think of something to address it.
It's comforting. I'm not sure I'm as comforted as you, actually, because I think, you know, the great historical example of an invention that had massive unintended consequences was the Haber-Bosch process. The most important people of the 20th century were Haber and Bosch. They invented this process for fixing nitrogen. They did that because that was the key to producing explosives for the First World War. But the side effect it had was that it made it possible to have artificial fertilizers. So the entire growth of population that we saw in the 20th century can be put down to that invention. It tied us into this economy where we depend on fossil fuels because the Haber-Bosch process needs fossil fuel energy to work. And the population of the Earth as it currently stands, probably about half of them would starve if it was not for the Haber-Bosch process. It's locked us into this dependence on fossil fuels that have led to climate change. So we've done the first bit of it, found a world-changing technology, and we haven't actually managed to sort out what the technological fix that will get us out of the problem will be.
What's interesting is that when Bacon tells us the Daedalus story, he's not just pointing the finger at an out-of-control individual scientist. He's reminding us that we all have a responsibility. The demands of the society in which the scientist works are just as important as the motivations of the individual scientist.
The concern in his myth is about how you control human intelligence for the good of society as opposed for destructive aims. And the myth is very much that you can't do that under tyrannical leaders. There's a sort of idea that you've got to get a better ruler because he keeps getting hired by selfish people who just want him to invent things for their own destructive ends.
The things that Daedalus did that had those downsides, how much of that was Daedalus's fault and how much of it was the society that made him do them?
And that's why engaging with the big ethical questions in science is extremely important for all of us. Maybe Bacon is telling us that we get the scientists we deserve.
What if instead of going to work for King Minos of Crete with his disturbed wife, he had gone to work for a democratic, egalitarian society which had said, we will give you great riches if you cure cancer? We could do that. We could build in the rewards for doing something other than building labyrinths or building sex toys. He had the brains, I'm quite sure, to have invented things that could have irrigated the desert. But he didn't get hired to do that.
Thought-provoking stuff. That was the History of Ideas podcast, brought to you by the lovely people at BBC Radio 4 and the Open University. And if that programme left your brain hungry for more ideas, you can listen to the whole series on the BBC iPlayer. You can also watch a whole host of brilliant short animations narrated by Harry Shearer, Gillian Anderson, and even yours truly, delving into the minds of some of the world's greatest thinkers. Find out about the golden ratio, perhaps, or whether we really have free will. Just search online for History of Ideas. See you next time.